Hi, everyone. Welcome to Skinwalker Debrief. I'm your host, TJ Allard, and I'm one of the executive producers of the TV series on History Channel called The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch. And I'm joined each week by Jason McCullen and Maureen Ellsbury, and together we'll dissect each episode of the series to give you more insight into the show. Now, since season one is over and there's not really a show to talk about, we'll continue the discussion of all things related to Skinwalker Ranch. And today, for the first time on the podcast, we're joined by the owner of Skinwalker Ranch, Brandon Fugel. Brandon, thank you so much for making the time, man. Appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for your support of our groundbreaking hit series on history. Very exciting year, and it has been quite a journey to this point. So it's a privilege to join all of you, and look forward to answering any questions you have regarding the series, our ongoing investigation, and really everything that you wish to know. Skinwalker Ranch.
Brandon, I don't know. This is the first time you're meeting Jason and Maureen, right? I don't know if you guys have met before.
It's a pleasure meeting you both. I've had fun watching your podcasts or your debriefs with Dragon and Winterton. I saw a part of the one with Uncle Jim Morse, but it's great to join with you today. I am joined by the original animatronic head from Terminator 2. This one is the one from the opening sequence of T2 that the famed late prop master, special effects wizard Stan Winston actually produced for James Cameron. And I collect movie props and a number of other things of interest. So,
Brandon, what are you working on now? Are you looking to bid on something these days? I remember last time I think you were looking at, it wasn't the Terminator jacket, because I think you had already had that, but there was another jacket, maybe Indiana Jones, was it? There was another jacket you were looking at.
Yeah, it was Indiana Jones, and I want to somehow track down the Kurgan sword from Highlander.
Oh my God!
Wow, awesome.
That's what I'm hoping for. I see online on occasion there are comments from people who will take different screen grabs from the show, and they see in the background of my downtown office. I'm right now broadcasting from my suburban office, but my downtown office has on the shelf, one of the Hellraiser puzzle boxes. It's the Lament configuration box, and it's actually signed by Doug Bradley, the actor who played Pinhead in that horror series by Clive Barker. But it's you can see it up on the shelf. I don't know if you've seen online. People will comment. Yeah. They think, how many Hellraiser puzzle boxes does Fugel have? And next to that is the original samurai sword that was wielded by Tom Cruise in The Last Samurai in that last epic battle. It's his special effects katana that sits there along with the original FBI badges for Agent Fox Mulder and Dana Scully. So I love collecting pieces of pop culture history, and it's a pleasure being with you today, and
that's awesome.
Love joining with you and your enthusiasm for the new series and what we're doing out at Skinwalker Ranch.
I mean, just as much as it's about the series, people are interested in you in particular. I mean, obviously, because you've opened this up to everyone. And I think one of the first things I think you and I had talked about when this was all getting started was that this is giving other people a chance to experience something that they wouldn't. And you see that coming from, a lot of the comments you see online. Like, people are, thank you for sharing the journey. Thank you for, opening this up to us. And I think that was something that in the beginning you kind of, were looking forward to. Like, you wanted to share the journey. You didn't just want to keep all the information and hoard it to yourself. I mean, I think we had these discussions early on, and I always thought that was great that you really wanted to share what you were doing, as opposed to, being very secretive and, no, this is mine. No, this is everyone's, is I think something you had
absolutely
said at one point.
I've always seen my ownership of Skinwalker Ranch as a stewardship. It's a special stewardship. And, you know, being able to inform the public of our investigation and really to be able to reveal the absolute truth behind the phenomena that we're recording, that we're observing on the ranch. There is a reality to what we have experienced on the ranch that we have really enjoyed sharing with the public. I mean, the ranch, you know, you've got a 512-acre piece of property that is the most scientifically studied paranormal hotspot, arguably, on the planet. And with that, and all of the various events that happen on that property, you have liability issues. You can't just open something like this up to the public. As much as it would be nice, I think it would compromise not only the scientific integrity of our investigation, but also, you know, it opens us up to liability. People get hurt. We've had some real unfortunate incidents where a number of our team members have ended up, you know, going to the hospital with injuries that to this day baffle the attending physician and the medical professionals that have advised on their cases. And so we take, you know, the injuries that have been sustained on the ranch and really the nature of what we're observing and experiencing on the ranch very seriously. You probably saw in the first episode as we transported Dr. Travis Taylor out to the ranch in the helicopter, my brother Cameron, who is a full-time pilot and runs our aviation interest. I mean, Cameron offered a prayer for protection as they were entering the airspace, and that was not staged. That is something that happens.
Yeah, he did that every time. Every time I went up with him, he did that.
Exactly. Isn't for show. That's not part of some act. We truly enter the ranch with a degree of humility and reverence every visit. And it's because we're dealing with forces that, frankly, we don't understand and that are both malevolent and benevolent. I don't think that it's all negative. I think we're seeing a whole diversity of phenomena out at the property.
Absolutely. And I think what he had said something about, like, you know, might as well power up or, like, you know, armor up or something like that. You know, if you're going to go into something like that, hey, whatever you can use,
yeah,
take it.
It's important to armor yourself and to prepare. I think you need to prepare spiritually as well as physically when you enter a place like this.
Sure.
And we definitely don't need like a Jurassic Park of the paranormal. And
no,
I think too, in people who know and have researched the ranch prior, obviously there was a direct shift. I think Jason can allude to this as well, where, you know, we know George and Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell personally as well. And when all of a sudden Jeremy was like, hey, you know, I've got access to create this documentary on the ranch. And that was a huge shift because it had been quiet for so long, because after the NIDS era and then Bigelow, you know, not being as forthcoming, then all of a sudden we were being shared information about new stuff happening. And that was obviously super fascinating for people that research it. So I think that's where, too, you're getting that level of people saying, hey, you're being so transparent. Thank you for sharing the information. And we agree on that as well. It's been like a sort of a peek inside, outside of a window into something that's been blocked off for a long time.
No, it's been an honor to share this experience with the public. And you're right, for decades, I mean, since 1996, this property has been under constant surveillance and has essentially been locked down. And for a period of time during the previous ownership era, it was, of course, part of a Pentagon-funded black budget program that to this day is really classified in nature. And, you know, we have yet to, you know, uncover at least the data from those years. But I frankly believe that what we're recording and observing with our team actually surpasses anything that was observed in the past. And if you talk to Mr. Bigelow's, you know, previous science advisors and his team, they'll confirm the same, that what we're observing on the ranch and what we're actually recording is now surpassing that which in large part they had been able to really document before. It's no secret that the phenomena at the ranch is elusive, it's transient in nature, and it's unpredictable, which really creates some frustration from a scientific perspective to not have the ability to repeat or to see repeatable results that are easily characterized or quantified. It presents a bit of a challenge, and we're trying to overcome those challenges in trying to really employ scientific rigor and discipline with what we're conducting.
I mean, and it seems to be working. I mean, people are definitely taking an interest in the stuff that we've seen on television so far. It's really opening people's eyes and kind of like, wow, this is not BS. Like, there's actually something going on here. So you've taken it out of the realm of like science fiction and books, you know, just words on a page, and now you're actually seeing it with not just one piece of data, but multiple pieces of data in multiple angles, whether it's multiple cameras or cameras in some other measurement device. Like, you're seeing things that have never been shown before. So this is kind of it is, like Maureen said, it's a shift in a good way, very good way. Getting started.
Yeah, I've been a bit baffled by some of the criticism. I feel like in the first 15 minutes of episode one, we revealed more than the totality of 20 years previous. And it's a little bit discouraging, following kind of our presentation of not only recent evidence, but also a pretty thorough review of what had come before, and to still not pass muster with a lot of people and enthusiasts is a little discouraging. And we hope to continue informing the public and allowing everyone on the journey along now, with us.
Jason and Maureen have a lot more experience with that than I do. And so you guys can both speak to this, the idea of, even though everything you're seeing, it's more than it's been revealed before. Obviously, there's going to be criticism, but this is kind of a thing that happens, right? I mean, you're never going to, please everyone especially in this community. Is that pretty safe to say?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, these are people that are sitting and only watching TV. They're possibly not doing any hard research. They're just, going on social media and interacting with other people who are watching the show that may not necessarily have a background. So what they're seeing is seeing things like, talking about the pillar of light in the sky, and then that's not addressed again on the show. So in their mind, you just gave up on that line of research, which is not the case, because behind the scenes stuff is going on all the time. So there's virtually no way to stop it.
Yeah, the television format is very challenging. There is no perfect medium, in my opinion, to be able to disseminate this information and to really inform the public. It's either too much science, or they're not entertained enough, or they feel like, I mean, for example, people are very critical of the season finale, saying, well, that was just a big recap as episode. All you did was recap. I'm like, well, no shit, Sherlock. I mean, of course it was. we felt like, in order to properly summarize the events of the season and the events that occurred over a 3-month period, we felt like it was appropriate and necessary to be able to go back and reflect on the experiences of the team and really look at the cumulative evidence and the cumulative experiences that were had on the property in order to I think be able to not only chart the course forward, but also properly assess the data and the problem set. So I understand. I really do understand the criticism, and I wish that there was a better way, a better format that could please everyone. And all we can do is try our best to improve, and learn from the past and try to make adjustments and hopefully raise the.
And if you had ended on a cliffhanger or something super exciting, and then season 2 didn't happen, it would have been real awkward.
Right. Well, I think You're right. And I think a lot of people don't realize, I mean, I had two conditions when I entered into the deal with the History Channel and A&E Network. Number one, everything had to be true. Nothing could be fabricated or contrived. It had to be absolute truth or nothing. I did not want to be part of some effort that would ever be questioned as far as its integrity. And number two was I insisted on using our team, the individuals that I have built relationships of trust with going back decades. And, you know, the actual people who've been working on the ranch and engaged with me as the primary core team since April of 2016. And, you know, none of these people have been part of any television effort. I mean, with the exception of Dr. Taylor, who is really brought in as an outsider to really challenge the team and to help us push the investigation forward. I mean, everyone profiled has come into this with no acting experience, no television experience. And this was truly a totally unscripted effort. I mean, I didn't even have notes when it came to my interviews and the background that I was providing that was interspersed with the episodes. I was just kind of shooting from the hip and trying to give my honest opinion and assessment of what we were facing on the ranch and the history associated with it. And, you know, what appeared on television was about as authentic and raw and transparent as could be hoped for, with, of course, you know, the dramatic music and whatnot that they add for editing and for effect. Sure.
It is television. You have to make it interesting. You know, you have to make it entertaining as well as just interesting. I mean, it's, you know, well, add that flavor to it.
Yeah. I mean, TJ, they did add, I mean, you have to add certain thematic cues to help the audience, you know, to propel the narrative. And none of that is inappropriate. I mean, as far as the score or the music that accompanied the investigation and the series, I think it was appropriate, a little bit dramatic, overly dramatic at times. And I didn't really control that, but I have to give a lot of credit and applause to the folks at Prometheus. I mean, this is an unprecedented effort. I mean, are you guys aware of another series like this? I mean, 8 hours of television regarding a place like this that was actually part of a bona fide government-funded black budget project that has a history of these type of phenomena. I mean, I don't think that anything has come before that even, you know, would be deemed comparable. And I'll be surprised if anyone can come up with anything in the future that would actually match what we've been attempting to bring to the public in the form of Secret of Skinwalker Ranch.
As far as I know, there's nothing else out there even remotely close to it. Now, Jason, Maureen, you guys know this. Like, what do you know? Like, is there something else that you would say that is comparable, or is this kind of is it an unprecedented thing right now?
Well, as we've discussed before, I mean, this is a unique situation with this paranormal hotspot that has this rich history, that has, you know, for lack of a better word, a fan base, a group of people who have been familiar with the stories of the ranch and the lore of the region for a long time. And as you mentioned from the start, there was closed gates put up there by, you know, previous efforts to do investigations on the ranch. And now all of a sudden we have open gates. We have that peer through the window, and it's being televised. So this hasn't really happened before, certainly in this genre. So it's really appealing for people who have known the story and for new people learning about the ranch for the first time. And as you mentioned, there's no way that you can please everybody. You're not going to be able to do that. And I don't think you should really ever try to please everybody, yeah, because that's not the focus here. The focus is getting at the truth. And I think that's what you're doing. And you mentioned there's no perfect medium, but you know, you have alluded to and mentioned before the web portal that that you guys are rolling out. Would you be able to provide more details about that?
Yeah, we are in the process. In fact, I've seen the beta version of that has been in development, and we you know, we're actually going to be unveiling a web portal that'll actually publish and present more detail relative to the ongoing investigation, the historical investigation and background, and I think provide a forum for people to not only review a deeper level of content, but also interact on a peer-reviewed basis and be able to analyze a lot of the photo images, the video that we've captured of UFO phenomena on the property and other anomalies that I think bear further investigation. I've always believed that a collaborative effort that involves a diversity of talented people, more eyes on this will help us, I think, better understand the nature of it and better, I think separate the signal from the noise. I use that kind of reference often when I look at and try to explain what we're doing at Skinwalker Ranch. And I think, you know, the process of investigation really involves really separating that signal from the noise and being able to extract the real truth, the real substantive data, and that which, frankly, rises above the prosaic or the more mundane.
Yeah, I have to say this is the one time that I've had to specify the word portal, because I brought this up, I think, last episode, and then realized people are going to think I need a portal over the ranch. So I had to specify this web portal. But I'm, and I know a lot of people, yeah, a lot of people are curious about this. Right before the premiere episode of the show, you did a live stream from the ranch. Is the portal going to have things like that associated with it as well?
Yes, we have the capability to be able to provide some live stream. I mean, we're going through a learning process right now, and you know, it's a process, not an event. You know, to bring all of this online at once is a bit of a task, and you know, a lot of people don't recognize that, you know, the events that happened, as depicted on the show and shown, were last year. I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, I was getting calls about the infamous alpaca incident as if literally we were out, you know, dealing with that last night. And I was like, wait, sorry, we were dealing with that challenge a year ago. I mean, that was that was a long time ago. And I think getting all of that archival material and being able to present that and post it in a user-friendly way that is easy to navigate will be part of the trick in establishing the right web portal. And I think it'll give people a deeper understanding of what we've accomplished with the show, with the investigation as shown on the History Channel.
Sure. No, and I think, you know, being able to share the journey, especially like this way, now that the show is in production or between seasons, we're going to say, being able to continuously update people through a portal or through podcast or through social media presence, I think that you're going to continue to keep that connection and the momentum going. And it's just going to generate more interest and more interest. And the contributions that people are going to make, once a portal goes up and people can get their hands on the data, it's going to be pretty amazing. Things are going to come out of it that wouldn't even think of.
Yeah.
And that's what their hopes are, right?
Again, we're doing this, in a collaborative fashion in service to the truth. I mean, a lot of people say, or a lot of people will ask me, you know, what is my agenda? What was I trying to accomplish by acquiring the ranch from Mr. Bigelow? And really it was a search for truth. It was the potential of having a living laboratory that could prove that we're not alone in the universe. And to be able to present the results of that investigation and being able to present that to the general public, I think is important. Again, it's part of the stewardship involved with owning the ranch. And I think we all share in that journey. We all share in that stewardship. And I look at my team members as partners and collaborators. I mean, TJ, I see you as a partner.
Of course. I mean, you've always said that to me.
Poor TJ spent a year begging to get an audience with me. I wouldn't even respond to a text message, let alone agree to a meeting, because right. I had no interest in really engaging in this fashion and really opening up, for a televised effort. I wasn't quite sure what would be appropriate, and I felt like it was important that we continue to focus on more observational science, but I was eventually convinced that this could prove quite useful.
Yep. And what people have to understand is you stuck to your initial idea of the way you wanted to do it. It was, you weren't going to bend or change anything that you were doing for television. This was happening with or without a TV crew. And that's, you know, I've tried to make that really clear to people. And that's why this was a plug and play event. So they were doing it regardless if television was happening. Brandon had this plan already in motion, and it was like, oh, you know, the network's like, wait, I can just come in, plug cameras in, and this is just happening?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's happening.
the ranch doesn't exist because of the dang television program. Right. I mean, the second that the cameras stopped rolling, the investigation just continued and has continued unabated ever since. Sure. I don't think people realize that. I mean, even this past week, we're recording strange phenomena. We've had all sorts of experiences, on the ranch that continue to not only, I think, teach us what is at work, but also, I think, open up new doors of understanding and also new avenues that we can explore in the future that will hopefully end up being recorded and ultimately presented to the audience.
Well, speaking of the audience, so I have to say this. This week has been nuts online. We have gotten more questions for you. I mean, you know, I'm going to hurt Dragon's feelings. Dragon, he just buried you, man. The requests for questions for Brandon were just crazy. I think it's the first time, you know, you're on, but it's like, I don't know about the two of you, like Jason Maureen. I mean, I've just seen a response that as soon as we announced he was coming on, it was you know, bananas. I don't know if you guys
did it was a great response this week. And I mean, since we started the show, people have been asking us to have a conversation with Brandon for sure. I mean, people who are interested in the ranch want to hear from the person who is behind the ranch. So it's understandable.
Well, bring it on.
Let's get to our questions.
Ask me anything. I have nothing to hide, and I'm anxious to answer any questions and shed further light on what we're doing.
Very cool. So we usually, you know, we'll get some through email, some through Facebook, and some through Twitter. And typically, Maureen will start off with the email ones. That's how we've kind of been going. So, Maureen, why don't you start with those, and we'll just move from there.
So we have Janine. On email asks, is there any research being done with the county or the town records regarding permits of what could possibly be buried on the land, or interviews done with prior owners of the land before the Shermans to see if they could shed any light on if there is something buried on the property, since there was stipulation there could be no digging on the property, or even use deep penetrating metal detectors to determine, or ground penetrating radar, I think would be the better option to determine if the thing in the ground is metal.
Okay.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
So one of my highest priorities the week that I closed on the property was really to start documenting the history of the property and go back to all of the decades predating the sale of the property to the Shermans and ultimately to Mr. Bigelow. I wanted to understand the historical context and really get to the bottom of whether the reports started with Sherman or whether there were strange events that preceded their occupation on the property. And so one of the things that I trusted Jim Morse with was really reaching out to the community and meeting with all of the neighbors, the owners of the neighboring properties, and seeking out those whose families actually resided on the ranch as the original homesteaders. I wanted to really get to the bottom of whether they had experienced anything historically regarding the property and what their feelings were and experiences, what kind of historical records are available that that would help shed some light on this very unique piece of property. And so, you know, with that, you know, we have pulled together an incredible historic record. I mean, we've gone all the way back to, for example, the 1930s, as far as verifying reports involving strange cattle mutilations, for example, that were actually recorded by the Locke family, who resided in Homestead 3. You know, their heirs have actually met with us and reported on the family history and have been willing to go on record regarding not only the cattle mutilation phenomena going back to the 30s for whatever reason on this property, but also other high strangeness. We have others that have, you know, firsthand accounts, you know, the decades following, even the 1980s, I visited with a very, very credible, respected gentleman who actually had an experience on the property in 1982 that he and his best friend had, and that to this day, you know, has shaken them. And the fact that they do not want to go public with their identities, they're willing to go on record and they're willing to sign affidavits or whatever relative to the reality of what they experienced on the property, but so many people are hesitant to come forward simply because they've seen what has happened with the Sherman family and the notoriety and potential harassment that people have experienced that have a past or a tie historically to the property. And a lot of people just want to be left alone. They don't want the controversy. And frankly, they don't want their names associated with these topics, as much as they're willing to go on record to say, look, privately, confidentially, you know, these things are real. You know, we've experienced these things on the property. You know, a lot of people do not want the fame or the attention, the notoriety that would come from that. And we respect that confidentiality. We respect that, you know, that request, which has been made by a number of people. And then you have Junior Hicks, Joseph Junior Hicks, who passed away this week, you know, right before, I mean, 2 weeks before his 93rd birthday. You know, Junior Hicks is recognized by everyone as really the resident historian of the Uinta Basin, who has spent, you know, over 70 years of his life documenting strange phenomena, you know, not only UFO sightings in the basin, but also other activity. And, you know, his work obviously, you know, became a part of a book called the Utah UFO Display. That was actually penned by Dr. Frank Salisbury, who's also passed on. But, you know, you look at Junior Hicks and, you know, his history and his background relative to the property. I mean, we have hours of interview footage with Junior Hicks. I mean, TJ had the opportunity to be there for a lot of that and to have that historical record and his remembrance of the property. It's really a very special part of the historical record. I want to clarify with everyone, there are numerous firsthand accounts that predate the Shermans that verify and validate that the UFO phenomena related to the ranch and the surrounding properties, along with the other high strangeness, is not something new and is not something that was fabricated or brought on by Sherman or the Bigelows. It's something that they inherited. It's something that they ended up grappling with. And I have great respect for the previous ownership of the property and what they had to contend with, because it's something that my team has had to deal with. I mean, it not just injuries, you know, that have sent people to the hospital, but also, you know, equipment malfunctions. I mean, constant equipment malfunctions. I mean, people people often ask online on Twitter, they say, well, how are you able to record the television show if there's constant battery drainage and all these equipment malfunctions? How are you able to get all of those beautiful drone, you know, shots and be able to actually document this? And the truth is, you know, we lost footage constantly while trying to document what was happening with the team. Equipment malfunction, camera failures, even just missing footage altogether that was deleted from the hard drives associated with the show. It became a common theme. At first, I think it caught everyone off guard. I mean, all of the production people who came in from California primarily, I think most of them would I think verify that they were skeptics. They didn't believe that there was really any validity to what was being claimed, and they were out there to do a job and to follow the team and to create a television program. And I think I would be surprised if there's anyone who served on that property who were part of the production team that left a skeptic, that left saying that there was nothing going on. I think everyone universally experienced strange phenomena and had things that really shook their view of reality or their view of the world. And I think, you know, changing everyone's worldview to a degree is part and parcel of a ranch experience, if you will.
Yeah, I know a lot of your team has shared that with us over previous episodes, that their views on life have drastically changed since being on the ranch. And you know, we had Jim Morse kind of covered a little bit about this on one of our interviews, but White Feather is asking, with knowing the history between the original Battle of the Curse, sort of the two tribes of the Utes and the Navajo, whether anyone has gotten the chiefs together for a healing circle on the ranch?
That's a good question. We haven't been able to pull together the chiefs, but we have brought a number of Native American spiritual advisors to the property. I mean, recognized shaman or spiritual advisors that are both with the Ute tribe and the Navajo tribe, that have actually spent time with the team, that have counseled with the team, with Jim and Dragon and Thomas Winterton and Dr. Taylor and Jim Segala. And I think showing a reverence for what they actually perceive to be happening on the property and in the surrounding area is an important part of, I think, our ownership and our stewardship of the property. I mean, we're dealing with forces that are truly unknown and elusive. And I think, you know, counseling with people that come at this problem set that approach the ranch from a different perspective, I think there's a spiritual aspect to the property. There's the consciousness studies. There are consciousness studies associated with the property that people wish to explore. And I think all of that has some validity.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you've also, and I appreciate that as well, because I think it's an important part of the ranch's history, like you said. One more question from email. And, you know, you've mentioned that a lot of people want to stay sort of in the dark and not have their identities revealed. And you know, for a while you were doing the same thing where you didn't want your name out there. So we have Ryan asks, now that, you know, you've come out and revealed yourself as the owner, how do your family and friends support or reject your life's choice to pursue this ongoing mystery?
Good question. I think, you know, for the most part, it has been supportive. I think it remains to be seen. I was very concerned. I mean, I went almost 4 years without revealing my identity. I wanted to keep, you know, my identity as the owner of the property private and confidential indefinitely, to be honest. I didn't have any intention when I started the discussion with the History Channel and the producers. I really wanted to stay out of the limelight and frankly felt like the team should be front and center, and that it wasn't really necessary for me to really go public. I also didn't want my involvement with the ranch to compromise my professional activities. I have a responsibility to my clients, to the communities that I serve, and to my firm to really focus my energies and my efforts on those projects. And I take that responsibility very seriously, and I didn't want my interest and ownership of this property to in any way distract or compromise those efforts. And I'm so far so good. I mean, a lot of people I think would be surprised to know that the ranch really only comprises maybe 5% of my focus or my attention. 95% of my attention remains really focused on my commercial real estate enterprise and other business interests. It's not that the ranch isn't important. It's just, I have other commitments and priorities that frankly take precedent and are higher most days.
Absolutely.
Right. That's it for email questions. Jason, all right, we'll jump to Twitter next, right? Then.
Yeah, for sure. So this first question from Twitter comes from Brian, and this relates to a story that you shared a couple different times, and it was covered on the TV show as well, and it relates to George. So the question is, does George have any residual effects from his being unable to move for 10 minutes that day?
He did. Following his visit, the day following his visit to the ranch, he was in the hospital and very ill for at least 3 weeks, and it was a mysterious illness. It wasn't something that they were able to actually diagnose. It wasn't the flu, but it actually put him flat on his back and really rendered him very, very ill, bedridden for a period of weeks following his visit to the ranch. He was there as security, as really the security detail accompanying a guest or a dignitary that we allowed access to the property at that time. And I haven't spoken or communicated with George for a couple of years since that incident, since their visit. We really haven't kept in touch, but it was very real. And it had a real impact. It was funny. I think it's important to note, and this is something that hasn't come out in the past. George and others that visited that day were skeptics. They did not come expecting to see anything unusual. In fact, I remember asking them the morning of their visit, I said, so what do you think of the UFO phenomena? Do you believe in any of this stuff? And, several of them said, absolutely not. We're just here out of respect to this gentleman that we're accompanying. And, we look forward to being safe and having a productive day. And it was funny, at that time, I had never had an experience. I had never seen a UFO or a ghost or anything of a supernatural or paranormal nature. And I chuckled and shared their skepticism. I said, well, I've never seen with my own eyes anything that would validate these things. I have an open mind, but I haven't had my own compelling experience, and that's the way that we started that fateful day.
All right. Here's a question I know you've been asked a few times, but it's a fun one. I like asking it and hope that something else slips out. But Ryan asks, can Brandon comment at all about what he and Robert Bigelow talked about when he handed over the keys?
Well, it's a good question. I had one very, primary visit with Mr. Bigelow. One visit initially that preceded my acquisition of the property. I'd never seen the property. In fact, I really acquired the property sight unseen. I'd inspected it, I think, maybe, 3 days before actually closing on the acquisition.
That's but when how most I went horror down, movies start,
right? Yeah.
People acquiring property without seeing it first.
Yeah. It's, I flew down to Las Vegas and had the opportunity to meet with Mr. Bigelow. And we really primarily discussed the historical record relative to the property. And I asked both he and Dr. Colm Kelleher who served as chief scientist over the property for a number of years. I said, you know, is there reality to these reports? I mean, is that which is reported in George Knapp and Colm Kelleher's book based in truth? I mean, did those events actually happen, or were there certain creative liberties taken? And, you know, they sat there, you know, totally sober and serious and stated, yes, you know, what we experienced and what the NIDS team and later the BAS team experienced on the property was absolutely real. And I said, well, are you willing to share the documentation, a lot of that evidence? And could we have that as part of the transfer of ownership, you know, the passing of the torch? And Mr. Bigelow, in a very respectful way, said not only no, but hell no. He, Bob, and I totally respect it. Bob said, look, there are certain things that are classified that that I don't have the ability to turn over because it was part of a government-funded effort. And there are other things that I'm frankly keeping, you know, private. And, you know, we wish you the best, Mr. Fugel, but, you know, you're in essence on your own. And I totally expected that. I did not have any negative feelings. I didn't have a negative experience dealing with Mr. Bigelow or members of his team. In fact, I found them to be very professional, accommodating, and I've had the pleasure of enjoying, you know, a friendship and a continued association, at least from afar, that remains warm and healthy. So I have no criticism of the previous team and their effort.
Just a quick follow-up. I know you've had a chance to meet with several of the people who had previously spent time on the ranch and were associated with Bigelow's research team. And I was thinking, because I know you recently did an interview with Erica Lukes, and you know, she was talking about, you know, rumors and speculation and possibility of testing of non-lethal weapons on or near the ranch. And that led me to want to ask you if you'd had a chance to speak with John Alexander at all.
You know, I've had one brief conversation with John Alexander, and it was after this show aired.
Interesting.
I didn't really have any interaction with him at all. Not via email or anything else. It was with others that had been involved with the Bigelow team. And so I still have yet to meet John Alexander or really have an in-depth conversation relative to his insight or experiences or perspective regarding the ranch.
Okay. The reason I thought of him, obviously, is his military career was spent focused on non-lethal weapons. And,
right.
You know, and he spent a lot of time on the ranch. And one would think that somebody who specialized in non-lethal weapons would be aware if, you know, that type of thing was on the ranch, or if what he was experiencing on the ranch had something to do, potentially, with non-lethal weapons. So
right.
Interesting conversation to have. But John Alexander's a great guy. Great conversation
sure.
with that guy. So if you get a chance, I highly recommend it.
I'm a big
John fan.
Yeah, the brief interaction that I've had was very positive. And again, have great respect for him and the others that conducted research before. You know, when I acquired the property, and ever since, I have been very vocal in stating that I've seen no evidence of any real advanced, you know, program that predates, you know, my ownership of the property. I mean, when I acquired the property, there wasn't even a sophisticated gated entrance with a guard shack. I mean, we've enhanced the fiber optic infrastructure. We brought in new power. You know, I think, you know, we've taken it to a whole new level. The place, let's just say, I see zero evidence of anything of that nature ever occurring or being conducted on the property predating me.
Sure.
Or even, and of course, we'd have nothing to do with anything of that nature. I've never been part of a government program in my life. I'm just an entrepreneur, a private individual. I've never held a security clearance. And, you know, the closest thing I've had as far as interaction with these these types of groups is I've had the privilege of working on the Falcon Hill Aerospace and Research Park up at Hill Air Force Base. And, you know, we've been building really, I think, the premier aerospace research park in the country. Wow. And worked with Northrop Grumman and Lockheed, BAE, and a host of others. But it has been purely private sector, commercial real estate oriented work.
Well, I'm sure the government has a file about this big on you now, though, that you're researching all this stuff.
And for those listening, Maureen held up a 6-inch illustration.
Well, they're learning a lot about commercial real estate.
Yeah.
There you go. TJ, you want to jump to Facebook questions?
Yeah, man. Let's plow through these here. This is from Facebook. Someone named DETA, Data. I would like to know how long Mr. Fuel has been interested in Skinwalker Ranch and how he first became aware of it. She loves the show and the whole crew. Looking forward to season 2.
Good question. I picked up the book Hunt for the Skinwalker at Barnes & Noble probably a decade or more or longer ago. I read it quickly in a weekend and found it interesting. And then I put it on the shelf and really didn't think about it until I was approached mid-year 2015 by one individual, but really several individuals ultimately that made the introduction to Mr. Bigelow and really asked me if I would be interested in potentially taking forward the research that had been conducted on the property. So I had very little exposure to the property or interest until I, you know, I was approached in 2015 by science advisors to Mr. Bigelow that I had worked with on a previous project and had built a relationship of trust with years before.
So that, I was actually going to ask you that. So why would they pick you to ask like randomly, hey, do you want to buy this property? But no, if you worked with them in a relationship.
Makes sense. So I had funded and helped lead an effort a decade ago involved with gravitational physics theory, you know, testing various theories, and you know, the science advisors that were involved with that effort, unbeknownst to me at the time, were also involved with Mr. Bigelow. And it wasn't until years later that that really the introduction was made and the dialogue, you know, really came to the front as far as the opportunity with the ranch.
That's awesome. I feel like that's been a question that's been floating around for a while.
It's a good question.
Another one here we have. So this is Donna asking, I was curious if any of those, this is very specific, actually. I'm curious if any of the surveillance cameras on the property have infrared capability currently.
Yeah, absolutely. We have many infrared cameras. We have thermographic imaging systems, night vision, as well as just the conventional surveillance capabilities. We have dozens of cameras positioned tracking all of the activity in the airspace and on the property.
Awesome. Now, I've seen this a few times. And you kind of addressed it earlier, but I have an add-on to this. So they ask, multiple people have asked, will you allow other teams to study or have you determined that it's best to keep it with your own team? Now, I know you said this is your handpicked team, but, you know, bringing in Travis Taylor, are there plans to rotate those specialists out like Travis? Absolutely. Are there others?
Absolutely. Again, I like to take a collaborative approach. I believe that the more brilliant, you know, minds that we bring to the table, you know, having a diversified, multidisciplinary approach to the problem set at the ranch is going to ultimately help us yield results and better understand what is at work. And so we look forward to inviting others onto the property as appropriate. I mean, you see on the ranch, on the Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, I think a lot of people don't realize almost every episode we brought a third party engineering firm or expert. And, you know, again, I don't understand a lot of the criticism. You know, people say, well, where are all the scientists? You know, why aren't you bringing real experts in? What are you talking about? We brought in, I don't know, 3-4 different third-party engineering firms and scientists and experts involved with ground penetrating radar studies, resistivity studies, the thermographic imaging. I mean, you look at all of the experts that we attempted to bring onto the property to consult with the team, not including, you know, Dr. Taylor and his incredible resume. And again, we're quite proud of the effort that we made. I mean, you look at this, we have three scientists engaged at the property in pretty much a full-time capacity. We have, you know, Eric Bard, who is a very accomplished and credentialed physicist. I mean, Eric Bard, a plasma physicist by training, holds numerous patents. I mean, he's one of the only scientists that I've come into contact with that can actually claim that he has taken innovations and ideas from the idea stage all the way through to commercialization. And I've seen over $100 million in annual revenue produced just in this valley as a result of Eric Bard's innovations. And to have his expertise involved with the ranch is quite a privilege. And then you take Dr. Sagala. I mean, Jim Sagala, again, very credentialed. He's a professor at the University of Rhode Island. Has worked on so many other research projects, and is highly respected and acclaimed. And then, of course, you have Dr. Taylor, who holds multiple PhDs, three master's degrees, is consulting with NASA and a number of other agencies relative to scientific endeavors. And you'd be hard pressed to find anyone in the public domain with his credentials that would be willing to submit themselves to this type of project and this type of effort. And so you bring three scientists onto the property, coupled with a team that bring, you know, security expertise, property management expertise, and really construction know-how. And you really have a dynamic effort that I think provides a solid foundation for the future. So we look forward to enhancing that team with other experts in the future and being able to continue to raise the bar.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm sure people are going to love to hear that. So we'll keep this as the last one. And this is going to play to your science, your sci-fi background here a little bit, you know, as you're sitting next to a Terminator head. So someone asks, or Carolyn asks, you know, what experiments are you wanting to see next season? Now, I know you touched on it at the end of that last episode, going around the room. But since then, has anything like, oh, you saw a movie and you're like, you know, we should try to do that or something like that. Eric, what do you think about that? How do you whip up something to, you know, that kind of experiment? Like, yeah. I can see you thinking out of the box there.
Good question. I think, you know, what we're trying to get to the bottom of what is at work here. What is the origin, the agenda? And also, what type of repeatable, whether it be electromagnetic fingerprints or signatures, attend these various activities? I mean, you look at the season finale and you look at the incident with the cow. It wasn't the fact that we happened to see a UFO on the surveillance footage that appeared in tandem with the cow dying that was most interesting. What I found most interesting was the fact that we had other correlated incidents. What are the chances? What is the statistical probability that you're going to pick up gamma radiation, you know, microwave energy surrounding this cow out in the middle of nowhere? You're going to have multiple smartphones malfunctioning with completely different operating systems. You've got one guy, Caleb, that has an iPhone, and then you have Thomas Winterton that has a Samsung Galaxy. You have all of these anomalies that are happening simultaneously. You have the herd, all of the other cattle that for some mysterious reason ended up moving to the complete opposite side of the ranch. And we're in an area that they had never ventured to before. And then following all of these incidents, after recording all of this data and logging all of these observations, what happens to the carcass of the cow? To this day, the carcass, the remains of this cow remain untouched. No scavengers have touched it. It still sits out there, essentially fully intact. Explain that. explain what is the statistical probability that you would see all of these events occur simultaneously with this event? And I think that you know, I hear criticism from skeptics like Mick West, who says, oh, that's a fly. And I'm like, okay, well, notwithstanding the fact that you may think that that's a fly, or there may be some type of prosaic, mundane explanation for what you're seeing, that you're just observing an artifact on the video, how do you explain all of the other anomalies? How do you explain all of the other high strangeness that attended that activity and that event? Good luck. I mean, I'm just a businessman, but, you know, in business, you know, we look for results, bottom line results, but we also look at all of the other data that we're accumulating, you know, when really investigating something like this or really tackling a problem. And when you see so many correlating events, it really begs the question, what is really at work? And I think it's interesting.
And that seems to get, you know, be what gets your mind going. You kind of undersell yourself. You're not just a businessman. You have a friggin' Terminator skull on your desk. You're a businessman with a Terminator skull.
Well, we don't know whether time travel may be involved with the phenomena right. That we're seeing on the property. It may be time travel. It may be multidimensional. It may be extraterrestrial. I think that what we're witnessing is all of the above. I think that it is not easily categorized, and I do not believe that there is one point of origin or agenda afoot here. I think that there are multiple agendas, multiple points of origin, and frankly, multiple causes to what we're observing on the ranch. And for whatever reason, the ranch seems to be situated in a place that allows for these type of interactions to occur. Whether it be, you know, if you're looking at it from a spiritual standpoint and you stay that, you know, the veil between this world and the spiritual realms is thin for whatever reason, or whether there are other dimensions or wormholes that allow for various phenomena to appear and disappear instantaneously. I mean, what I've observed with my own eyes on the property defies all conventional or natural explanation. And I'd never seen anything like this before owning the property. I bought the property as a healthy skeptic. I honestly believed that there would be a natural explanation most likely behind what had been reported. And I figured that those who had claimed to have had experiences were really kind of the product of groupthink, of kind of a scientific snipe hunt of sorts. And I was wrong.
You know,
I was wrong. I've had to humble myself. I've had to admit that, you know what? There is something to this, and it's not easily dismissed.
I mean, it means a lot. Like, you have enough people out there saying these things, credentialed people, you know, like, quote-unquote, serious people with air quotes, you know, here, that are saying these things and that are entertaining these ideas. It's not just like, oh, yeah, it's a TV show. No, there's something happening. You're going to get to the bottom of it, if anyone is.
And it's been happening for decades, yes. If not hundreds of years, if not millennia. You know, we've at least been able to document high strangeness on the property from firsthand witnesses and actual credible historical accounts going back to 1930.
And this is great. I mean, hearing you talk like this, we could go on and on. I mean, we've had you so long. We can't keep you anymore. This is terrible. We're just like keeping them on here, you know?
No problem. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to set the record straight and to frankly, speak with confidence relative to the reality of what we're seeing out there at Skinwalker Ranch. This isn't some type of, you know, promotional stunt. You know, none of my team members really wanted fame or expected that they'd see any real, you know, significant compensation that would come from this. And I think we're still skeptical to a degree.
And Eric's still angry about everything. I always tell him, he's always, he's a curmudgeon, like,
yeah. Well, Dragon will always have permanent bitch face. That's just part of the reality of working and interacting with Dragon.
That's good. Quote's gonna come back.
I was telling TJ right before this that I went on Facebook earlier to look. I want to delete Facebook. It's an awful place. But I went on there to look to see if there was any new questions before this. And I saw a string of women talking about starting a fan page for Dragon. So, and apparently there's one for Thomas too.
Yep.
So that is happening.
You know, my dream is now as we concluded season one, and there may be a season two in our future, we'll see. You know, my hope is, you know, maybe at the very least, what may come of this effort is, you know, I'd love to see something like an Adult Swim cartoon, The Adventures of Dragon, that chronicle his exploits on the ranch.
Yes.
Oh, I can.
We are
see the
all about that. Yes.
You just opened a can of worms.
Yeah. I hope we get some fan art from this. Definitely. There are any cartoonists out there? Please do some concept mock-ups for that.
No. Knowing that you guys are really good friends, you and Dragon, like you're never gonna let him that down ever.
No. No, and he never wanted to be called Dragon. You guys know the history of that. But it's funny. I think anyone who knows me, who really knows me, understands that I'm just a 17-year-old stuck in a 47-year-old body. And, you know, when it comes down to it, I'm the most curious of all of us when it comes to really, you know, trying to get to the bottom of what is happening at the ranch and, you know, being excited by a lot of what has been observed. So, no, I've appreciated this opportunity to join with all three of you and to have you as part of our journey. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to keep doing this. I mean, this is going to keep going, and obviously open invitation whenever you can, whenever you want to. I mean, we communicate. So, you know, as time goes on, if things keep going, we'll get you back out here. And, you know, people love the direct communication with you. They love that you actually participate and get involved in the community and answer questions online and do things like this. You don't back away from any interviews. You know, people have opposing views. You're straight in, you know?
Yeah, I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to hide. I want to get to the truth just as much as everyone else. And I welcome the opportunity to collaborate and to make this a partnership with the public in really being able to prove with scientific empiricism that we're not alone in the universe and that there's more to our reality than meets the eye. Hey, if the ranch investigation ultimately proves that we live in the Matrix, how cool would that be?
That's the next. I love it. The simulation theory. That's my next project. So I've been saying this for a while. I'm constantly looking for projects, and I feel like there's something there. There's a simulation theory project that I have to find the experts, the simulation theory experts, to kind of see what we can do with them. But Brandon, thank you again so much. This has been great. Appreciate it.
Very good.
And peace out, everybody. Yes, man.